Great. Well, I'm so glad I was able to catch you. And I want to say that you are you're on location. I'm in my office, at my house in Atlanta. But you are. Why don't you tell everybody? First of all, tell everybody I'm speaking with Sean Blanton of Run Bum Tours. And where are you right now?
Yeah, I am in downtown Moab right now. Actually, on my way to hopefully head back to Atlanta today. Hopefully get in by midnight. But yeah, I'm out here in southern Utah in the desert. I put on trail running races. I'm an ultra marathon runner. I paraglide. I skydive as well. So we just got done with the one race I put on during the summer down here in the LaSalle Mountains in southern Utah. So yeah, I've just been down here running and paragliding and jumping out of planes a little bit.
Oh my gosh. And so the book I've done is about the psychology and neuroscience of thrill seekers, and a little bit about like sort of what goes on inside the minds of people who do these kinds of things, just to maybe sort of dispel some of the myths of people who do some of the things that you do. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the exciting things that you've done, but also to talk about some of the myths that you see from your perspective. And so when you tell people some of the things that you've done, and we'll talk about some of those exciting things, what do people say? Like, what do people who don't know you very well, what do they say about some of the things that you do?
Well, I don't know. I think it's funny. I'll start with running because I think that might be the most relatable topic for most people listening to this. You know, when you tell somebody you're running 50 miles, 100 miles or whatever, you know, it's always the same answer. It's like, I don't even like driving that far. So, you know, like and it's kind of funny. And your brain has this, I guess, this really weird way of rationalizing things, or, you know, it tries to relate things. So it's like, oh man, I've run, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles. That was horrible. 100 miles, 50 miles. Oh man, I would die. And then it's like, no, you actually wouldn't die, but you might be pretty miserable for a while.
Yeah. Well, you do have a race that's called the Georgia Death Race. And so, you know, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about that race? Why is it called the Georgia Death Race? Like because that sort of pushes people beyond what everyday people normally do.
Yeah, really, the name kind of, it just, originally we were going to call it Park to Park because it's point to point in the North Georgia Mountains and we run from one state park to another. But I thought that sounded pretty damn lame. So I was like, how about the Georgia Death Race? And people love it. It's kind of, from the inside, it's kind of just like a big joke. And I tell people all of my races are a different extension of the human psyche. Mm. And, this one is, you know, anger, hatred, redemption, that kind of thing. And we kind of, when people sign up, we're like, congratulations, you now know when you're going to die, you know, at this race. And, you know, you're going to die. And we kind of heckle people. And, you know, it makes it harder, but also people are able to focus like, okay, this freaking race director is, you know, you know. So when I'm out there and I'm gritting hard, you know, I'm going to be thinking about, I'm going to prove him wrong.
But and one of the things I feel like I've learned from talking to people who do these adventure sports things is that it changes them. I mean, it changes them not in just a physical way, but there's something mental that I feel like it affects them in a really positive way, not only while they're doing it, but afterwards too. Do you feel like you see that in the people that you train and that you work with?
Oh my God. So I've run over 150 ultra marathons, and I'm only 33 years old. And I think one of the things, that you can find in any aspect of your life, whether you're an ultra runner, you're an athlete or not, is that, you know, in modern day society, we avoid discomfort and we avoid struggle. And it's really sad because, you know, especially that millennial generation. But if you, you know, face confrontation, you put yourself into uncomfortable scenarios, if you do things that you're not certain that you can actually complete or finish, you will be the best version of you. Like that is where life begins, is at the edge of your comfort zone. I saw a sticker one time on a car that said, "Comfort is a lie." And I'm like, damn right. And it's, you know, I'll go into just for a second talking about what ultra marathon running is. Well, first of all, the marathon distance of 26.2 miles is a really random arbitrary distance. It wasn't even the distance that Pheidippides ran. I think it was like 130 something miles, but we have this, you know, as we grow up, we hear about marathons. Marathon is like something that is that almost that far off yet obtainable thing if you really want to do it. Ultra marathoning is, you know, the longer you go, the highs get higher and the lows get lower. So I'm sure from a scientific standpoint, you know, your brain's getting some sort of endorphin release from that. But I can tell you that I've gone out there and I've run 50 miles and been like, oh man, you know, like that didn't really hurt. And I've also gone out there and run 5 miles and it hurt worse than that. It hurt every single step. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. You know, just some days you have it, some days you don't. And I think what's interesting is when you, the further you go, like your brain, your body kind of does this thing. I would assume this is what's happening, is that, you know, it's fight or flight. And the further you go, it's, you know, it's choosing it's prioritizing, you know, where the blood flow is going. And a lot of that is generally to digestion in your muscles. Yeah. And so like your blood flow to your brain almost kind of like cuts off and you kind of go in, you know, like what, you know, fish do. It's like half their brain shuts off or whatever it is to quote unquote sleep. And you kind of have this weird thing going on where you'll get, you know, I don't know, like a song lyric or somebody said something to you and it's like a broken record playing over and over and over. And I've never taken like hallucinogens or anything, but I would assume that this, you know, state, the stasis that you're in is, you know, probably very similar where sometimes you can have out of body experiences and, like I said, the highs get higher, the lows get lower. But that's life, right?
Yeah. And so when did you first start doing these adventure sports? Is it something that's new to you or does it feel like it's something that's sort of been part of you for as long as you can remember?
Oh, 100%. So I can tell you like the exact moment in my life where I started to do, I guess you'd say, more adventurous things is my dad when I was younger. I have him to thank for this. He would take me to Six Flags. I'm born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, in the city. And he would take me to Six Flags. We loved riding roller coasters together. Like that was our thing. And I loved them. And yeah, it kind of got me into that. And then I randomly started running and, you know, I think ultra marathon running is absolutely an extreme sport. You know, it's, you don't know if you can do it every time, even if you've done it 150 times or more, you know, it's just, it's kind of like a scratch off lottery ticket with your body. I got into skydiving. One of my friends who's now passed away, he didn't die skydiving, but, Corey Dickey, he basically was like, oh man, I just got certified to skydive, blah, blah. You know, I did a tandem jump in Hawaii and then I came back and I was like, I've got to do that. Now I still to this day have never jumped tandem skydiving. And I've never flown tandem paragliding either. I just knew that it was something that I wanted to do and he was so jazzed up about it. And I would go, yep, that's something I want to do. I don't want to pay the extra $250 or whatever it was to do a tandem to know that I'm going to like it. I was like, I just want to go ahead, sign up for the classes, go through them and get
and
certified.
Just do it. Wow.
Just do it.
Yeah. So tell me about that first time jumping out.
Yeah, it's like, it's so weird, you know, having traveled so much, being on commercial planes a bunch. And when you go on your first skydive, you have an instructor on either side of you holding you to make sure you don't just flip over and spin over and just go out of complete control. Because believe it or not, I mean, it's really not sky jumping. It's more sky falling is really what is falling with grace, if you will. Yeah, but the first time I did it, you know, these guys, you know, they just kind of, they kind of mess with you a little bit. They're like, oh, cool, you know, space monkey ready to orbit. but you jump out and they're holding on to you. And then there's that like solid 1 or 2 seconds where you're like, oh shit, where's the ground? There's no stomach drop. You don't really get a stomach drop from skydiving. Yeah. And then it's just kind of all of a sudden you're just freaking out. And it probably took me the first like 50 to 100 skydives before I even was able to kind of be comfortable with what was going on, to like look up and be like, oh, there's the horizon. Like, that's really nice. Or, oh, look at that like lake over there. You know, until that point, you're kind of just so focused on, you know, the couple feet around you and the people right around you. And it's a rush. Skydiving is a rush.
Did you say 50 really to 100 skydives? Wow. That's amazing.
I've got about 500 skydives. So, which it really isn't that much. I jump with people who have 10,000. So,
wow. So what other things have you done that you, that you would put in that category of thrill seeking kinds of activities?
Well, I've done 2 wingsuit jumps out of a plane. So you asked me earlier, you said, you know, that normal people would think, or activities that normal people would kind of think are crazy. I'm all about calculated risk. Okay. Yeah. I have zero desire to go base jumping. I almost got talked into it out here in Moab a couple weeks ago.
Oh, how come?
And I threw water on my face. base jumping's not if, but it's when you kill yourself from base jumping. And I'm not ready to die. So I typically do things. I've watched people die skydiving doing dumb stuff, like play stupid games, win stupid prizes, I always say. Yeah, I mean, skydiving, believe it or not, is probably one of the safest sports out there, period. And people always think, oh, your parachute's not going to open. That doesn't happen. You have a reserve parachute. The people that die skydiving are swooping. They're experienced skydivers jumping by themselves, not tandem, doing dumb stuff sometimes, or, you know, higher risk, not dumb stuff, but higher risk maneuvers.
Right.
So there you go. But I think honestly, out of all the stuff that I've done, the scariest thing for me is paragliding. Skydiving, I jump out, I feel fine, like everything's safe, you know, it's great. Paragliding, I get really, really tight butt cheeks when I'm taking off paragliding. My glutes get a pretty good workout paragliding. It's different. Like paragliding, the launch, you're having to run to get to pressurize your paragliding wing. And, you know, sometimes like the stuff that I do, I've flown Hawaii, Switzerland a bunch, France, where else have I flown? I've actually like the second person ever, only to fly off the highest mountain chain east of the Mississippi, which is the Black Mountain Crest Trail. So a lot of times, you know, when you're flying from like an established, location, like a launch, you know, it's not sketchy, or it's not as sketchy, but you know, a lot of these places I'm going, it's like, I'm hiking up and it's like, oh, this looks like a good spot to launch. Especially in Switzerland, it's like, oh man, this is a ridgeline. I'm by myself. You know, it's not like skydiving where I've got a plane full of people who are way more experienced than I am. It's like, no, I've learned enough that I can be responsible and have a good time, or I can kill myself. And I think, you know, for me, one of the reasons I like paragliding is I do what's called hike and fly paragliding. So I really, if you can't tell, I enjoy exercise. And so you put your paraglider on your back. I have a lightweight setup, and you hike up anywhere from 800 feet to even 5,000 feet above, 6,000 feet above where you started with your paraglider on your back, and you take off and you fly back down. And, you know, so I'll be setting up in Switzerland, and somebody's like, I've set up between avalanche barriers and Zermatt in Switzerland. I had to shoo some farmer's sheep out of the way to set up. Yeah. And, you know, you have all these lines that are connected to you and your wing. And it's like, you know, if one of those pops, you know, that could spell, you know, real bad time, if not even killing yourself, you know? So it's, you've got to put all your confidence in your gear and double, triple check it. You know, and it's funny, you know, like a lot of times, I find myself not necessarily the pioneer of anything, like the first person to do something, but you feel like you're pioneering things because it's like, well, there's not really anyone I can go to for information that's flown here, especially in the South. Like, I flew off the Roan Highlands, which is in North Carolina, Tennessee border. And I don't know anyone who's ever flown off there. Yeah. And, you know, I went to launch and I scraped my legs all through the tops of these trees. And I was like, okay, come on. Finally caught an updraft, and it, you know, popped me up 100 feet, but it was, I mean, it was scary, you know? So
you have to really be prepared and also trust yourself that you've done the preparation in order to do a good job.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, paragliding really is like probably 80% checking the weather and making sure you have, you know, more optimal conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, in your early days when you're starting paragliding, and I've been doing it for about 4.5 years now. So I'm a very intermediate skydiver and a very intermediate paraglider. But, you know, I also don't live somewhere where I'm doing that every day or even every week or every month, you know? So, but you know, it's like, okay, the weather is this. It's like, oh, that's probably okay for me. And then it's like, then there's like gray areas, and it's like, well, do you want to push it or not? And so it ultimately comes down to like, what are you comfortable with and what's safe? And it's a very, very, very fine line. And, you know, today might be one thing, tomorrow might be completely different.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that people don't always understand, is that there's a lot of knowledge and preparation and skill that goes into it. And I think people think that you just sort of strap on something and just go. And I don't understand how much preparation and training go into the things that people end up doing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I do know people who are like, fuck it, buddy, let's just go wing it. I am not that person. Mm-hmm. But I've been skydiving for 13 years now, paragliding for 4.5. And, you know, actually some of the sketchiest stuff I've done really, and I'll segue this into why I do stuff like this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, some of the sketchiest stuff I've done is called scrambling, up in the Canadian Rockies. And scrambling is, we don't have that out east really, maybe like up in Vermont and stuff, but it's basically like mountains that have kind of like crumbled a little bit. It's in between like hiking and climbing. So some of the stuff that you're doing is, and again, I'm not a climber, so I don't know the climbing terms when people are like, oh, that's like a 5.7. I have no idea what that means. So like you basically end up going across like tops of peaks or climbing up gullies and stuff that, you know, if you fell, you would get really hurt, if not kill yourself. But people do it, and they don't do it with ropes. Oh. And so I end up doing like a lot of that in the Canadian Rockies. And I've done some stuff up there. Like one time, I don't know if you've heard of Lake Louise.
No, where?
Like a famous place. It's Banff National Park. So if anybody's listening, Lake Louise. I've done two more memorable run hike scrambles out there, where I started at Lake Louise at like 5,000 feet. And if you're looking at a photo, Google Lake Louise, Canada. And if you look at a photo, you'll look and you'll see this beautiful glacier fed milky blue lake. And then behind it, you'll see way in the backdrop, miles back, you'll see these beautiful snow-lined peaks, okay? Just like nice cliff band. It's like, oh, that's the Canadian Rockies. I've started at that lake and gone up and summited those peaks without ropes before, where I was doing glacier travel, and man, was that fucking stupid. But it was a rush. And, you know, my friend who is a climbing guide, she's like, you know, I know your skill level. You can do this. This is how you do it. And again, by myself, and I found myself kind of running up the normal trail, get up to about 7,000-8,000 feet, and then all of a sudden go up a climbing approach trail, and it's like, oh wow. And now I'm on a mountaineering route, and I ended up passing a guy up on the top of this like coal, which is like a pass, it was covered in snow, and he was a mountain guide, and him and his the client were, you know, roped in together, had like full on crampons, you know, they had all this stuff. And I've got like a little trail running pack on. I've got my backwards trucker hat on. I've got some sunglasses, you know, I got shorts on and it like a t-shirt. And I was like, hey, excuse me, can I come by on your right? And that guy almost fell off the damn mountain. He was like, what the hell is this? You know, what are you doing up here? How'd you get up here? And I said, you know, I followed your footprint. And ended up tagging the peak and running back down. And man, that is still to date is one of like the coolest things I've ever done in my life. And my problem is if I know about something like that and someone's like, oh, I think you could do that, then it's like, if I don't do it, it will bother me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually,
let's
do talk about the whys. So what do you feel is the why behind all of these things? Because you've done so many different kinds of things and that are both mentally and physically challenging. What do you think is driving all of it?
Honestly, progression for me is just like, you know, I look at my life in this series of events that's, I'm progressing towards something. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that's just death. Maybe that's just how I perceive things, but you know, it's like, I'm constantly building on different skills, you know, and you don't typically look at like paragliding as like a life skill, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, trail running and, you know, semi mountaineering, that stuff, I do look at as skill set. And, you know, I guess one of the reasons I do it is kind of that, I'll put it to you like this. If you drove up a mountain and you get to the top and you get out, you know, you go to the Smoky Mountains, you go up to Clingman's Dome, or, you know, you get out and take a couple photos in the parking lot. You're like, man, this is really beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. You spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. You get back in your car, you drive back to, and then you leave, right? It's like you had an experience, okay? It was beautiful. You go back, you look at those photos, whatever. If you ran, hike, whatever, up that mountain on foot, and you get to the top of that mountain, you're taking photos, you're going to have a smile that's bigger than anyone in that parking lot. You're going to have an experience that those people can never relate to. You know, you earned, like the juice was worth the squeeze. You earned that view.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons I ultra run, you know, it's like, you know, hey, I got here when I could have driven here maybe, but like, that's the easy way. Taking the hard way is just makes it so much more, I'm so much more appreciative for it. Yeah. And I think, you know, as far as like paragliding and stuff goes, you know, for me, it's kind of like this general progression of like, okay, I've flown off this. All right. And I was comfortable with that. So let's go bigger. And I mean, maybe it's a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, always trying to go bigger and badder and not necessarily in an unsafe way. You know, just like, okay, my skill set was here at this time. I did this. That was the hardest and craziest thing I've done. Okay, now I've done that. What's next?
Yeah, I'm
a person that's always what's next, what's next, what's next.
Yeah. And it may be there'll be a time when, like I spoke with, I'm not sure if you've seen her online. She calls herself Slackline Girl, where she does slacklines in high heels. and that is going to be one of the podcasts that I did. And she, for a while, she did a lot of free solo slacklining, where she would do slacklining without any harnesses. And she did it for a while, and then she just sort of didn't need to do it anymore. So she sort of reached a stage in her progression where she felt like she learned something from that. And then she was like, I think I'm done with that now. And she, so she looked for other kinds of experiences. And so I don't think that that may be true for everybody, but there may be a point for some people where they progress in terms of what may feel dangerous. And then they're like, well, let me go in a different direction. But you're going in so many directions that I don't think you're going to ever run out of things to explore. That's the exciting thing about what you do.
Well, actually, it's interesting that you say that, is because that's kind of what skydiving got to me. Like, you know, it got to the point where I was like, you know, this is fun. It's just not as much of a rush anymore. And so now I guess I'm doing paragliding, and that scares the hell out of me. And it is that rush. I guess that was the progression for me. And now if I go skydiving, I kind of typically just jump out lower than everyone else, get under my canopy, and kind of just play around in the clouds, because I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. I was talking to someone earlier, and they said if it was just about adrenaline, I'd just run out in traffic, and that would be an easy way to do it. So
no, that's true.
So what is next for you? What's coming up next that you're excited about?
Well, I've been battling like this weird injury, and honestly, you know, if people take nothing away from this, listening to this, it's like sitting is the new smoking is really what the deal is. You know, get out there and don't stop moving. I used to referee sports full time. Now I own my own business putting on trail races, and I end up sitting way too much, and now I'm injured because of that. But for me, my next goal is in February, I'm going to try and run, hike for the fastest time, the entire Florida Trail. Is 1100 mile trail, and hopefully be averaging close to 60 miles a day until it's done.
That's great. And if people want to hear more about what you're doing, you've got lots of stuff online. That you've got a website, which is runbumtours.com. You have a podcast too. Tell everyone about your podcast.
Yeah, our podcast is all about running, and it's really loosely based on that. It's a bunch of inappropriate dad jokes and stuff like that, where we loosely talk about trail and ultra running. It's called the East Coast Trail and Ultra Podcast. It's really hilarious, actually. And my co-host, really the head guy, his name's Ryan Pluckelman. He's actually a radio DJ, so he's got the voice, and I just kind of ramble and talk about crazy stories from back in the day.
Okay. And any other things I didn't ask you about that you want to make sure people know, if they want to get started doing these kinds of things? Any other kinds of myths that you want to dispel about the lifestyle of an adventure sports before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think fear is a very interesting thing, because as somebody, I want to maybe be relatable to people, but you know, it's funny because as I've gotten older, I've developed these very, very weird, like, fears. And I get panic attacks. So, you know, like, one of my fears is driving up to altitude. And it all stems from, you know, a couple times as a kid, you know, having, I had asthma growing up. And so it's created this weird seed that got planted. It's like, you know, gasping for air. So I get weird if like driving just straight up to 10,000 feet if I'm not acclimated, or you know, even if it's just temporary. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of stop me from doing what I like to do. Like, I can't ride roller coasters anymore because I hate that feeling of being trapped into something. But guess what I do? I still go out there, and I still make myself do that. And I think, you know, it's like, you don't have to jump out of a plane per se. You don't have to go paragliding, you know, but do something that, you know, doing things that scare you, you know, it doesn't have to be on the daily. It's only going to make you a better person, because at the end of the day, you're going to be 90 years old if you're lucky to live that long, or you're going to be dying in a car wreck and bleeding out, and you're going to be thinking of all the things that you wish you did. Now, I'm not saying you need to go like freebase crack cocaine and, you know, jump off a bridge or base jumping, but, you know, live a little. And, you know, fear is a good thing. You know, we're only born with two fears. What is that? Fear of loud noises and falling.
So push yourself a little bit.
Push yourself.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much. And, I hope you, you know, you're still, you know, the weather out there is always going to kind of great. So I hope you get to, and, you know, do some, exciting things while you're still out there. And thank you for taking some time to chat with me. And, I'll be in touch soon. So thanks so much for spending some time chatting.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks, Ken.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.